If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
Having a mentor compresses timelines. It took them a certain number of years to learn to get to where they're at. And by learning from other people, you can compress that timeline for yourself and avoid making some big mistakes.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Greg Butcher is an active investor and syndicator in multifamily apartments and single family homes. Greg holds a bachelor's degree in management information systems from the University of Oklahoma and an MBA from the California State University at Bakersfield. He's a retired Marine Corps officer and lives near San Diego, California. Greg, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sam. Thanks for having me on today. Appreciate it.
Man, this is great. Pumped to have you here. I'd love to hear your story, even though I know, you know, quite a bit of it already. I'd love for our listeners to get to hear your story of kind of where you started in real estate, where you are now, and how you got there.
Sure, absolutely. So my career, most of my adult life, I was an officer in the Marine Corps. So I served all over the country, all over the world. And started about 2002 when someone gave me that little purple book that started so many people on their journeys, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And so that kind of opened my eyes to possibilities. I decided that when I moved from duty station to duty station, I was going to start buying a house to live in. And then when I left, turn it into a rental. And if I could pick up some others along the way at the same time, hey, great. So I started doing that for a while. Made a few mistakes here and there as I was doing it. Spent some time overseas and came back. And I was still trying to figure out how to make it more scalable when I found out about multifamily investing in apartment buildings and realized, hey, the secret to scaling residential real estate investing is to invest in multifamily, not single family.
Right.
So I joined a program oriented on that, a mentorship program about 5.5 years ago, and I've been going on ever since then. I've invested in other people's deals passively and have sponsored a couple deals myself also, and looking for more as we speak.
Man, that's awesome. That's awesome. That's a very clear, you know, a clear, concise picture of what you've done when it comes to the single family houses. Have you offloaded all of those?
I still have one, but I sold the next to last one this year, actually.
Oh, congratulations. Congratulations.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah. Walk us through the transition, not the transition many of us make. We go, hey, the way to scale single family is to go multifamily. I'm not going to put it like that. That's pretty funny. But walk us through kind of how you then went out and found your first deal and kind of what, you know, what that process looked like.
So the program I was in, I met a lot of great people through that program and, a lot of people who were looking to get into deals, both passively and looking to sponsor. I ended up partnering up with two guys who were in that same program who had just gotten into their first deal like 2 months earlier in Oklahoma. And they had deal flow coming into them in Phoenix. And this is early to mid 2016. Phoenix market was really heating up at the time. Now it's even hotter and hotter right now. So I live in San Diego and I'm not going to invest in California where I live, period. So I have to find markets to invest in outside where I live. And Phoenix is about the closest one. The job I had at the time, once I was off active duty, it was telework. So I could just kind of go back and forth as I needed to, as long as I got my work done on time. So I said, yeah, I can be your boots on the ground in Phoenix, because they still had full-time jobs working IT. So I did that, went out and looked at a few properties and we submitted a few offers. And I think it was our third or fourth one. We ended up getting a deal.
That's awesome. So, yeah. What's the drive time from San Diego to Phoenix?
That was about 6 hours.
Okay. Yeah. That's not terrible. That's something within striking distance.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay. So you got this deal under contract and then what?
So then we had to do the work to raise the funds and all that kind of stuff. So it was a 120 unit C-class building, $8 million purchase price. We had to raise just under $1.9 million for it.
So what was the financing on that 1.9? I guess you're looking at roughly 25%. Is that right?
Yeah, 20%. Yeah, we had an 80% loan to cost loan. So it included the rehab value. Oh, wow. And then we had to raise the rest. So
how was that process? I mean, your first complex out of the gate, you've done nothing but single family. And the next thing you know, hey guys, heads up, we got to go raise $2 million. I mean, that's intimidating for most of us. So
that was an eye opener, you know. And I had invested passively in multifamily, but it was my first time leading as a co-sponsor.
Sure.
So there was a lot of learning that happened along the way. So one thing, a big one, is what you're touching on there about capital raising. I had no idea about capital raising. It really was probably underemphasized in the program that we're all part of.
Sure.
So we got there, but it was a little tough. But my portion was lower than theirs because they had just closed their first deal.
So how much of that did you have to raise?
Well, I don't know about had to, but I probably raised roughly $500,000 for $1.9 million.
Right. And hey, out of the gate, you know, if that's your first time raising 5 cents, I don't care. It's a steep learning curve, I would imagine.
It is, absolutely. So from that point on, I decided, okay, I need to really focus on building up my investor database. Right. I didn't know how to do it really effectively yet. So I was just going to events and getting cards and add them to my list for quite a long time.
Right. So, and was that effective?
Yes, but not nearly as effective as it could have been.
Okay. I want to hear more about that when you get a chance. Sure. What that means.
So what that means is I wasn't using any kind of like a CRM, customer relationship management tool, anything right. like that to remind me who I needed to touch base with. I wasn't doing anything, putting out a newsletter at the time or anything that would help me keep top of mind in people's minds. And so a lot of people ended up, when I came time to do my next deal, they had kind of forgotten a little bit. Mm. And I was, so unless it was someone I happened to run into again at another meeting, then maybe I'd talk to them, maybe I wouldn't talk to them.
Right.
So, and since then I've learned the value of continued communications and staying top of mind in people's heads, you know?
Right. That's interesting. So you got that $500,000, raised, which is awesome. You guys closed on the deal. Was this something, and again, this is your first project for you, right?
Yes.
What were some of the things, looking back? You said, man, that was a key lesson I learned in that first deal, either good or bad.
Yeah. It's about, number one is capital raising.
Sure.
Really. That was number one. And keeping up with folks. Another big one was about, asset management techniques. In hindsight, we really didn't quite know what we were doing. And so over the last couple of years, I've really focused hard on both developing my ability to raise capital for deals, but also on my ability to conduct effective and efficient asset management, managing that third-party property manager who's working with us as a partner to help run the building, because no one's going to care for it like the owners will. They do, the managers we use do great work, but at the end of the day, they don't own the property. We do. So.
Right. And so you ran into certain, it sounded like you ran into some trouble, or not trouble maybe, but ran into some things you wish were done differently.
We do. Yeah. There were things that in hindsight, some decisions we could have made, some things we should have been tracking that we weren't tracking on. And then, a couple stories I heard right as we were selling the property from the property manager about some things that we didn't know had happened there that made me think, oh, okay, all right. So right.
What were some of the key metrics maybe that you wish or key things you wish you had stayed on top of as it pertains to property management?
Focusing on a couple things. So focusing on the amount of bumps we're getting each month out for renewals. When we did renovations, how much more we were getting for units that were renovated as opposed to that was staying at the same level. Focusing on the amount of time that units were vacant before they were leased. Now, mind you, occupancy was really strong through there, so it's not like we suffered a whole heck of a lot. But there's things we could have been doing better, I realize in hindsight now.
Right. You said something about bumps. What did that mean?
Raising the rent for renewals to get close. So for example, we have a tenant who is at one level from a couple of years prior,
right.
And now our market rent level is a higher level. So the difference between that is the loss to lease for people who aren't familiar with multifamily so much. And so when we do a renewal, we would prefer to keep a tenant and renew them, vice having them move out, having a vacancy period, having to do a make ready and then bring someone in, someone new in. So we want to renew them, but we want to renew them closer to market levels. Maybe that's at market level, but if there's a huge gap there, then it might not be able to be. So you just have to be careful when you're doing that.
And so what was the property manager doing that you didn't like as it pertained to that?
Nothing. It wasn't anything that they were doing. It was the fact that we weren't tracking some of those things very well. We were having an occasional conversation maybe, but we didn't have a systematic method to track it on a routine basis.
Gotcha. So, and now your those management company didn't either?
If they did, they didn't bring it up to us.
Got
so,
it.
Yeah. Also changed management company since then. That it was a small kind of boutique firm that we were one of their larger properties that they had. Didn't have too many properties around. And now we have a larger firm we deal with that has more processes and procedures in place and more support for the on-site teams. So.
Sure. Oh, that's fascinating. Those are great things, you know, great things to keep in mind. Okay. So so moving forward from that deal, you guys held that. And then do you still own that or have you sold that already?
We sold that almost 2 years ago now. So
how did that happen?
The market had been going up crazy fast. The rents were substantially higher than what our pro forma had been. And at the time, we saw the writing on the wall that there was some kind of downturn around the corner, but we didn't know how soon or when it was going to be. Our rough rule of thumb was once we've doubled people's money, then maybe it's time to think about going ahead and selling before something does happen that then kind of reverses the flow of that and maybe take, whether it be something, a major expense, capital expense that was unplanned for, or an economic downturn or whatever. So there was probably some extra deferred maintenance on the property that we weren't really, hadn't plans to correct when we first moved in also. And so weren't totally funded for it. So we decided, you know what, it's better to go ahead and get it out while the getting's good, right, and turn it over to new owners who are freshly capitalized and coming in and ready to you know, fix some of these things on the property. So
right. So hey, and that's not a bad first deal. Like in 2 or 3 years' time, you've doubled everyone's money, and you get to walk away with a win under your belt. So you know,
absolutely.
Right. I'll take one of those every 3 years. You can just keep just keep sending them my way, man. So what happened next? Like you said, all right, cool. It sounded like that was almost a one and done deal. And at this point, you have no more assets on the books. Is that right?
Yeah. So except for some passive investments. So those partners I worked with on that deal, that meanwhile they were buying other deals, but mostly in Texas. Okay. And so I wasn't working with them on those deals. So I was looking for new properties, concentrating still in Arizona. And I ended up partnering up with some new partners. And literally a month after the first place sold, we got into contract on a new place in Tucson, Arizona. This is a 110 unit B-class deal we bought for $15.9 million just in the summer of 2019.
Wow. Okay. That's great. Well, I want to hear about the B-class deal. Actually, I have a question for you about the C-class deal. How was it? Let's start here. How was it managing a C-class deal? Was that difficult for you?
I wouldn't say difficult. I learned a lot while doing it. I learned how to, you got to ask some of the tough questions. You got to know what's going on in the property. It takes driving on the property a little bit more often to really understand what's going on and make sure the property manager isn't trying to paint you a rosier picture than what's actually happening. So you need to understand the realities on the ground there.
Got it. And so then that's true for, I mean, you know, if that's your specialty, go for it. You just have to know what you're getting into. No, that's great. And so you move from a C to a B class property. So a month later you're under contract and now you got a $15 million deal. What was the finance? Walk us through the same process again. I want to know financing. Sure. I want to know the challenge of the raises. I want to know kind of what you guys did differently because you know, we're talking about how to scale. Yeah. So what did you guys do differently? You said, man, we're not doing that again. You know, round two, we're going to change up kind of some of our methods in order to improve. What were those?
We ended up funding it. We got a 75% loan to cost, similar structure loan, but this time we did a Fannie Mae Green loan. So by going in and doing some renovations, specifically replacing lights, interior and exterior, with LED bulbs, replacing shower heads with low flow shower heads and a few other things. Around the property, we're able to get enough water and electricity savings, which are then passed on to the tenant. That really doesn't help us out, but it helps us out in terms of we get a lower interest rate on the loan that way. So,
how much lower? Do you remember?
It was about 30 basis points. Yeah.
For what sounds like a fairly marginal expense on 110 units, I mean, that can't be an enormous expense for light bulbs and some shower heads.
No, it certainly wasn't.
What was the payback period on that? I'm sure you calculated it, but do you remember it?
Oh gosh, I don't remember that off the top of my head. So we just finished doing all that work about 2 months ago.
Okay.
Well, as part of that, probably the biggest expense was actually replacing the in-unit washing machines with a low water use model of washing machine.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So you're going to eat up some capital expense on that. Okay.
Yeah, that was the most expensive part of it, but we got a much better deal that way, and COVID kind of threw a wrench in the works because suddenly we were just getting ready to start the project, and all of a sudden we couldn't go in anyone's units for a little while. So. Oh, wow.
I bet your tenants were thrilled.
They were. And then we had some supply chain issues with getting the wash machines because the plants were closed down in Mexico or something like that. And so it took a couple months extra to get those into stock where we could start replacing those. But we did that. We ended up selling about half of the old ones. We made some money back from selling those to a used appliance store. The other half weren't really valuable enough to hold on to, but yeah.
Right. So circling back to things that you did differently, obviously one of those was getting the, the Fannie Mae Green loan. What else did you guys do that you improved upon from your first
better property management? Like I kind of talked to you a little bit before, we got a larger property manager, not too large, but we have good folks there who the company gives them a lot of backup, whether it be the accounting, training, everything else, all the overhead support that they need to do their jobs. They do a really excellent job with it. So we've been very happy.
Right. Oh, that's great. That's great. So you improved property management, you improved your financing. What else did you go through? Talk to us a little bit about your partners, because I know obviously you met, I think both of your sets of partners, you met through a peer group.
That's right.
In a mentorship program. But have you had any, what are some good things and bad things that have happened as it pertains to partners?
I'd say that on the first deal, there was a couple of personality issues, a little bit of headbutting that went on that wasn't pleasant to deal with. You know, they say it being in a partnership is like a marriage, and so you gotta be careful who you're getting into business with. The ones I'm with now, we still own that property in Tucson, has been phenomenal. Just working with people that you're on the same level with, and you just generally enjoy being around them, and you'd hang out and have a beer with them after work, as well as talking business with them and doing stuff. So
right, how did you guys divide up? And again, this is all centered around kind of how you're scaling up. So how did you guys decide to divide up responsibilities?
So one guy, he had a little bit more experience than I did. He'd done a couple more extra deals. He has an accounting background. So it's about, it's what we our strengths were, really. So he kind of handles the tax things. I already had a CPA relationship that we decided to go ahead and use. I had certain skill sets from my first deal that I brought to the table in terms of just general management, dealing with the financials, handling the escrow draws, since we borrowed the rehab cost for the properties. We have to do the work and then finance that out of our operations, and then draw on the escrow account with the lender afterwards. So doing all those and tracking it all. And then my third partner, his background is he's a landscape architect. So dealing with vendors, doing the more hands-on stuff, tracking the rehab and looking at the bids and asking the right questions to the construction manager and all those kinds of things. He's much better at than I am. So we ended up kind of organizing things around what our strengths and what we naturally gravitate towards.
Right. When it comes to the construction side of things, is that something, does your property manager handle that, or do you guys do the construction independent of your property management?
No, the property management company does that. And that goes back to some of that overhead support that they provide that's really good. We pay a little bit more when the construction manager has to get involved, but we pick and choose which projects we bring him in on and which ones we just handle with the on-site team. And every time we get them involved, it's definitely money well spent.
Gotcha. That's interesting. So did you guys, the three of you then, so you have three partners. Did you guys just split the general partnership three ways?
Yeah, basically.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And the raise on this was a lot bigger. This was not a $1.9 million or a $500,000 raise for you. This was now a $4-ish million raise.
That's correct. It's a $4.2 million raise. And there's actually a fourth partner, but they're kind of a silent partner. They helped with the fundraise and everything, but they're not taking part in asset management of the property now afterwards. Basically, it was a harder deal to fund. There was a lot of competition funding other properties at the same time around from the group that we're in. Mm. So that's when I realized that I really have to start building up my network outside of that network as well as inside that group. So I decided right there that I was going to join a capital raising program and learn how to do it more effectively.
Right.
Because I didn't want to have that problem in the future, you know?
Right, right. Well, you got it across the finish line. That's the important thing. So
exactly.
You know, that's it's been fantastic to hear your journey. If you can give us just quickly where you guys are going, like what's the future look like for you?
I'm working with the same partners to continue looking for properties in Arizona ourselves. I'm also putting myself out there and meeting other people who are looking to get into deals in other parts of the country, mm-hmm. where I might be able to add some value to a general partnership team in terms of raising capital. In terms of asset management, whether it be performing some of it or coaching and using some of those the templates that I've developed and obtained over the last few years. So that's kind of the direction I'm moving in right now.
Gotcha. That's awesome. Greg, we'll get into the final four here. If you were to distill everything you know down to one piece of advice and you're giving it to an aspiring investor, what would that one piece of advice be?
I'd say find a mentor, whether it's a paid program or whether it's someone you're bird dogging around or a sponsor that you invest passively with the first time and then ask a whole lot of questions, someone who doesn't mind taking the time to kind of teach you as you're coming along. Find someone because having a mentor compresses timelines. It took them a certain number of years to learn to get to where they're at. And by learning from other people, you can compress that timeline for yourself and avoid making some big mistakes.
Right. That's a great piece of advice. What's one thing you're currently doing to stay on top of your game?
Right now, I'm just joining an asset management mastermind right now. And I'm still in that program on capital raising too, and continually putting more pieces in place for that. So, yeah.
Gotcha. That's awesome. When it comes to giving back, what's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
I still have a W-2 right now on the side. It's working for the Marine Corps. I'm a retired Marine officer, and that job helping contribute to the national defense. But at the same time, I'm hoping within the next year, I'll be to a point where I can quit doing that and do real estate full time. And, if I was back in Oklahoma where I grew up, I'd be able to do that right now. But in Southern California, it's kind of difficult. So it's a little bit more expensive out here.
Right.
But I really hope to grow my outreach once I can quit the day job a lot more. I specifically try to work with military and veterans as much as possible right now and teach them about the power of passive investing. And I want to continue doing more to give back to that group also.
Right. No, that's awesome. That's awesome. If the listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Absolutely. So my website is on the wall right behind me there. It's BLUSKY for Blue Sky, no E in blue, -equity.com. And my email address is greg@bluesky-equity.com.
Greg, thanks for coming on today. Certainly appreciate it.
Absolutely, Sam. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.